Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and we have some things to go over in the land of entertainment. You are going to hear some movie content. You're going to hear some TV content. You're going to hear some comics content and so much more. This is what we do here at the ODPH. We give you a parlay of topics each and every show. And Pad, after the show, where should everybody head on over to?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website. Sign up on all the social media accounts. Everything's been blowing up lately, which I love seeing. Thank you so much for interacting with us there. Keep those numbers growing, because it's more important to interact with everybody than just say, hey, we're at such and so plateau.
Yeah.
Literally, the talk on Threads, too, by the way, is blowing up. I got to definitely shout out everybody that's listening to us on there and interacting there as well. So definitely make sure you sign up on the accounts. Go check out the TeePublic store, where there's always something going on there. You never know when a sale is going to pop up. Just putting it out there. Shout out to all our amazing patrons. They have a whole section there. If you want to join the club, very simple. One tier, $2 a month, and you get some bonus content each and every month. Also, check out the blog section, where you have reviews dropping left and right. Rumor has it, our very own Padawan J might be dropping some Star Wars knowledge on there. Stay tuned. Also, we're on most providers, but if we're not on your favorite provider, we will try getting on there. But Pad, like I said, we're on how many providers?
We are on 810,487.
Exactly. So you can find all the links right there on the directory page. Check out the classified section as well, which has friends of the show, such as Dragon Master Games, 3FN, and so many more. Also, the music section, where you can find out such great bands as Brian Wolf and the Howlers, Shout Out the Robots, Tom Jolu, Second Suitor, Floodlands, the list goes on and on. Basically, if it's anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at ODPHpodcast.com. And always remember on socials to use the hashtag ODPHpod. Kicking off this edition of the entertainment show, I mean, honestly, Pad, is there a bigger show right now than Disney Plus and Marvel Studios, or I should say Marvel Animations, X-Men 97?
I mean, arguably, no. Fallout is certainly up there, and we will have a review for that very shortly. We're still working our way through the series.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only thing I can think of right now that is bigger than X-Men.
Yeah, I would say so. That came on this past weekend. Obviously, as Pat alluded to, we will be talking about that very, very shortly in the upcoming weeks.
That's what happens when you drop them all at once.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the gift and the curse. But the one thing that's been working for this show as an X-Men 97 is obviously capturing the magic of the original animated series. And they've been pacing it out enough that the fan base has been growing each and every week. And it's been connecting with pop culture. And we're seeing more and more of an influence on this on the socials as well. And it's a testament to the creators behind this, because they've literally found a way to make lightning strike twice.
Mm-hmm.
And where we've gone in the series thus far has given us a lot of memorable moments. If I said, I can't feel you, that's striking a chord with everybody right now because of what happened on last week's episode, Remember It, which if you haven't seen, might be one of the greatest animated episodes of all time. I think that's a very fair statement to make.
Yeah.
So that being said, we are going to be reviewing the latest episode entitled Life, Death, Part 2. Now, if you're new to the ODPH, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. Drop us a review on your favorite podcatcher. It definitely helps the algorithm. What we like to do is give you a spoiler-free statement. So that way we don't ruin anything for you. We are very, very conscious of that.
Mm-hmm.
After we give you a countdown, though, we do go deep diving into spoilers. And when we go deep diving into spoilers, we don't hold anything back. So in the liner notes of this podcast episode, wherever you're watching or listening to us, if it's YouTube or on regular platforms, we do timestamp when we go into spoilers for you. So we don't want to be blamed for ruining anything for you. But that said, we got to get into the review, because there's a lot to break down with this latest episode. So Pad, give me your spoiler-free statement about Life, Death, Part 2, Episode 6 of X-Men 97.
Good episode. I enjoyed one part of it you know, without getting into spoilers, a little bit more than the other one. The other one was nice. You know, I did enjoy it at the end of the day. Fun, definitely interesting to see where things are going to go from here, because it's a moment in certain things in the episode I've been anticipating, and I've been kind of wondering, like, okay, we know something of this nature is supposed to happen, because you look at the news and you look at what's been announced already, you go, okay, this should happen and this should appear at some point. We're finally at that point. So now that we're here, it feels like we're about to hit the gas running.
Yeah, I thought they did a great job splitting this episode up too.
Yeah.
And we'll do a more deep dive into spoilers here. But I think where in the previous life-death episode, it didn't really mesh well.
No.
I thought this one it did.
Yes, and, very much so.
And I thought they really hit the points they wanted to when they got into that portion of the story. The other half of this episode, I really think paid a little homage to a certain aspect of the X-Men history, and definitely has things moving towards the finale of this season.
Yes.
So I think this is a big win. Obviously, it's hard to compare to last week's episode. We have to keep that in mind. But it's still been a great episode. One of the better ones this season.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would say we'll give our final rankings by the time the season wraps up. But sure, this one definitely delivered on all the fronts I was looking for and surprised me a little bit with who we saw at the end. So that being said, Pad, it's spoiler talk time. 3, 2, 1. Let's go.
Excited to finally see Xavier on screen. This wasn't a surprise if you'd kind of paid attention to the news, because it was announced a couple of weeks before the show aired and started that Ross Marquand, of course, from Walking Dead fame, Red Skull in Avengers Endgame, you know, most notably among a lot of other things.
Yeah, he's done a lot.
You know, it was announced that he would be voicing Professor Xavier, and not because I don't think it was for any reason that like the previous actor didn't want to do it or he'd passed away. From all we can gather and all the information we've seen, and hashtag ODPH pod if you know a little bit more than us, but it just seems like the actor retired because he's still around, you know, he's still alive, but his acting credits on IMDb stop around 2015. So it just seems like he retired and wanted to go off and do his own thing. To each their own. But to find, we knew Xavier was going to be there at some point because he's still in the opening credits. He's been in the opening credits the entire time, not in the necessarily roll call, I guess we could call it, with like who's in the X-Men, but he's still been featured in the title sequence, you know? So it was exciting to see him show up. And I liked the Storm portion of the episode as well, just because it really didn't do much for me when the first part aired, you know, about 2 weeks ago. But now that we've got the full story, I'm sitting there going, okay, I like it a little bit better because I can now see the full start to finish portion of this story.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think what they did here is paid a great homage to the time period of Xavier and the Shi'ar Empire. That is a little complicated,
to say the least.
Yeah, which you have to keep in mind of when he is in the Shi'ar Empire time frame. Because there's a lot coming out of the heels of the Dark Phoenix saga, and it carries over through to, in the comics, we get around Uncanny X-Men 200, where he's wounded and he has to go away. So in comparison to the animated show, he's never been quote-unquote dead. They had to take him away.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of difference there, but I love how they tied it back there. And then when we get to his big reason for coming back to Earth, it definitely ties into where we're going, especially with who we saw at the end. And I'll have to admit, I was a bit surprised that this character is the big bad.
Yeah.
But it makes sense, too.
I mean, the dude's voice has been in every intro of the season as far.
Oh, sure.
And that's the big thing with this show. I think a lot of people got to realize is they knew, and I got to give credit to the animators and the producers and whoever made the decision behind the scenes for this. Obviously the intro of the original animated series is hallowed and beloved by fans young and old, you know, so they knew once they decided to, you know, kind of update the intro music a little bit, because it's not exactly one-to-one, it's a little different, you know, but it's still got the core essence there of the music. But they knew folks would be watching it, in the fact that you know, they've kept it the same, and they're changing little things, because that's the thing you got to do with this intro. If you're not watching the intro to see what little things they've changed, you're missing out on some hints.
Mm-hmm.
But his voice, you know, Sinister's voice has been there laughing in every intro from the start of the season.
Well, I think the reason that I didn't see him being the big bad here is because they kicked off with the whole Madeline Pryor ordeal.
Right.
And obviously, as long as she is a part of this show,
right,
Sinister is connected.
Right.
It is what it is. But to see how he is factoring in at the end here is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But as we kick off, and I definitely want to touch upon this too, the opening credit sequence was changed in response to Remember It.
Mm-hmm.
To a degree. There was a little, we can say hiccup a little bit, but
sure.
Just hear me out with this. Gambit and Magneto were both taken out of the heroes portion of the intro.
Mm-hmm.
They were replaced with Nightcrawler.
Yep.
So where we're going to go with that, I'm not sure, but I'm excited to see him.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the ending, and the ending is still the same with Magneto facing off with Charles Xavier.
That's been the same every week since the start, yeah.
Right. So I'm wondering if they're...
Because it's even Magneto in his old costume from the first series.
Right. So I'm wondering if they're saying that this is going to be the catalyst for him to come back to being old Magneto.
Could be. I mean, the other thing I want to point out, too, is we did see a certain figure in those intro sequences, and that would be Nimrod.
Yes, which if you've been reading the current X-Men run, he has been featured very, very prominently.
He was there twice. He was there when they showed Cable, and then there was a separate occasion when they showed him a couple seconds after.
Mm-hmm. And I love how they are tying him in here to the show as well as the comic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because with what is going on in the Krakoan era in the comics, there's a lot of things that are reflective in this show.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying it's identical, but you can definitely see where they picked a little bit
close
and borrowed.
Enough.
Yeah. And listen, it's been working, so I'm not mad about this.
Right.
But where this episode kicks off is there's a big battle with the Shi'ar and the Kree Empire.
Right.
And we do see a familiar face from the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pat, do you know who that is?
I can't remember the name.
Ronan the Accuser.
Oh, right, right, right.
The big bad of the original Guardians Galaxy movie.
Yep.
And his forces are fighting with the Shi'ar. So they have touched upon this conflict a slight bit in the comics.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as well known as the Kree-Skrull War.
Right.
But there is a conflict between the Shi'ar and the Kree. So I like how they kicked off with this. We see Deathbird come crashing through the spaceship that Ronan is on,
mm-hmm,
and is setting up for more conflict to happen. Deathbird is the sister of Lidlandra and is more known to be very impulsive, a little more aggressive in attacking, a little more irrational, I would say.
Yeah.
But we do see her teaming up with the Imperial Guard of the Shi'ar Empire, which is a very eclectic group.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows the most famous member is Gladiator. He's the one with the huge mohawk.
I remember him.
Yeah. So we do see them come in, and they're fighting the Kree Empire. So as they're taking their victory of defeating them, Lilandra makes a big announcement to the Shi'ar Nation, and that is that she is engaged.
Yep.
To a mysterious figure who is almost in strife armor. Now, if you know who I'm talking about from the comics, it's X-Force.
Mm-hmm.
But it's similar. It's not the same, but it's similar. And in that guard pad, who is behind the helmet?
Professor Xavier, a walking Professor Xavier.
Yes. So during his time away from Earth, it appears he has been healed.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in a very good place.
Yep.
As he's now accepted a bride-to-be.
Yeah.
And during this announcement, Deathbird is not hearing this.
Comes in much like Brandy Rhodes did. Wait, wait, wait. Hold up a minute.
Yep.
Who told you? Well, you know the rest.
Yeah. So she interrupts this announcement and calls forth the rite of Emdasha.
Uh-huh. And everyone in the room goes, oh, shit.
Yes. And, Pad, what is the rite of Emdasha?
Basically, it's challenging him to, like, hey, we don't think you're on the up and up about this. Prove to us you're on the up and up about this. We want you to purge all of your memories of Earth To prove your loyalty. And basically, now the thing that I got confused with this, was it of his memories or was it of people who knew him on Earth?
I believe it's his memories.
Okay, because that was the one part I got confused with when I was watching the episode. But yeah, no, the core of it is they challenged him to get rid of all of his memories of Earth and the X-Men to prove, hey, you're loyal to us. You're not here for other underhanded purposes.
Yeah, and I think that is something that they do dive into, the reason being. Because when they decide if you're going to be now the head of the Shi'ar
right.
royalty or a member of it,
yep.
we need to make sure you're 100% all in.
Yeah.
There can't be any loose threads because obviously you're a human.
Yep.
And from Earth. So you need to make sure that we are here. So this winds up going into a little bit of conflict of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And as Xavier is leaning into going about his new life, they start doing the right.
Yep.
And in this, he gets asked, basically, are you willing to sacrifice the memories of your X-Men?
Yeah, because I don't think the X-Men part got brought up until the second go-round.
Yeah.
Because initially it's like, oh, purge all of your memories of Earth. And he's like, okay, fine. And then they turn around and go, oh, by the way, you know, much like Vader, they've altered the deal. Pray they don't alter it any further.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, hey, by the way, you got to forget all about the X-Men too. And he's like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. And at that point, you can see the conflict on his face of, yeah, he's not down with this.
No, he's definitely not, because he's willing to sacrifice enough. But at the end of the day, this is where Charles Xavier is still loyal to his dream
mm-hmm.
and the family that he cares about.
Children of the Atom, as he calls them.
Yeah.
Well, we hear him finally say it.
He finally says it, which I marked out for. I'm not going to lie. But this is where, like I say, it really connects to the loyalty he has there, even though he is loyal to Lilandra. There's no question of that.
Oh, yeah.
She really wants him to stay there. She understands it. And that is one thing that she's always been in the comics. She's been very understanding about his loyalty to Earth.
Yeah.
And is more forgiving about it. But when he refuses this,
mm-hmm.
this causes a little bit of drama.
Just a couple issues.
Because Deathbird, who has always wanted the throne, wanted to be accepted.
Yep.
You know, does have a certain Loki vibe to a degree.
Yeah.
Is willing.
Minus the mischief.
Yeah. Is willing to go to combat. And then you do see there's a little skirmish, if you will.
Yeah.
Because the Imperial Guard has to get involved. There's Deathbird and forces going on.
Yeah.
This is, honestly, I'm not going to lie about this. I was waiting to see the Starjammers show up.
Ooh.
Then that is Cyclops' dad with intergalactic pirates.
Yeah.
And I know sooner than later we're getting Gabriel Summers.
Well, he'll come back because I know he was in the first series go around.
Yeah, Vulcan will be back, and I'm very curious at the pop culture reaction to him. Because he's being, you know, in the spotlight there. It's a very complex story.
Right.
Being the third Summers brother.
Right.
And just how that gets explained. Pat, there's only one way to describe that.
Reasons.
But we'll see that when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But during this fight, Xavier decides to do something, and I love this moment, because he decides to do what?
Teach a lesson.
Mm-hmm. He puts everybody in a classroom in the astral plane.
And we mean everybody.
Yes. And literally goes, class is now in session.
Like at one point, Deathbird tries starting some stuff, and without even looking back at her, he goes, demerit. And conjures up, what was it, like an orange or an apple?
It was an apple.
Into her mouth so she can't talk.
Yeah. And I love this moment because when I think of Xavier, I don't really lean into the version we see in the comics now.
Sure.
I lean into more of the, you know, very stern Taskmaster
mm-hmm.
that is trying to get, you know, his dream across to his students.
Right.
And that's what he's doing here. And he's trying to, you know, explain his point to them.
Oh, I got a Mr. Feeny vibe from him.
Well, I think they played it up in that vibe for the cartoon.
Yeah.
And this is kudos to Marquardt's voice acting.
Yes.
Because I think he definitely had that teacher vibe. I love how you brought up Mr. Feeny. Now that you mentioned that,
mm-hmm.
it clicks in.
Yeah.
So I can see him doing this. and he's trying to explain his dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how he breaks down the Shi'ar Empire, because what he essentially says is, you're no better than everybody else you've fought.
You're not as great as you think you are.
No, and he starts doing a chalkboard diagram.
Chalkboard receipt.
Yeah, break it down.
Oh, my Lord. So he basically starts bringing, he's like, listen, where are you? Why are you where you are? Or whatever he says. He's like, why are you in the position you're in? And that's because you continuously, you know, basically he's like, you treat him like a farm. You till the land until it's no longer of use to you. And then you just leave and you move on. And any empire, any potential war, any of those worlds could have risen up and been in equal of power or size to you. But because you got there first and you were able to stomp them down, they never rose to their true potential.
Mm-hmm. It's a great point to bring up. And honestly, if you look back at the history of the Shi'ar Empire,
he ain't wrong.
Yeah, there's no fault. There's no lies detected. It is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So in this ordeal, he does get a, dare I say, a psychic telegram?
Something, yeah.
Because he gets wind of Gambit's death.
There's something bigger going on with this, because let's not forget, you brought up he gets the message. Let's not forget back in episode one, where then we thought it was Jean Grey. It's now Madeline Pryor. Let's not forget the psychic vision she got.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Obviously, it could have happened this way in the comics, where like they're getting force premonitions like it's Star Wars. But in the cartoons, I don't remember them being like Anakin in Revenge of the Sith having the vision of Padme's death and going, shit, I got to prevent this. I don't remember them doing this or doing something like that in the cartoons. Someone's got to be like pulling the strings and warning him. Now, it could be our certain friend we saw cameo unofficially in last week's episode. That was in the sky. It could be the Watcher, but something bigger's going on and interacting with things.
I love the point you brought up about the Watcher, because I think it had to be.
Could be.
Because he doesn't show up for anything that's not catastrophic.
Because the other thing I want to bring up, and I can't take credit for this, folks a lot more eagle-eyed than I did, noticed, and I'm showing you, that the series got put in the MCU multiverse saga in the Marvel hub on Disney Plus. So if you go onto Disney Plus, you can do it on your phone, tablet, or even on your TV. Showing Ken, you click on the Marvel tab.
It's right there.
It opens up. You scroll down. There's featured character selection, the Infinity Saga, and then the Multiverse Saga. You go all the way to the end, and there's X-Men 97. It got added into the Multiverse Saga this week.
That's brilliant.
So could be something to it. Could be nothing to it. We'll have to wait and see.
No, I would buy that theory, because the only one I made up when I was thinking about it is, if Madeline Pryor is somehow still alive in Genosha.
Sure.
The only thing I could think of is she tapped in the Phoenix Force somehow.
Could be. I mean, because assuming Madeline Pryor is still alive, there are three Omega-level telekinetics running around.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that two of them are getting, you know, apocalyptic, no pun intended, messages and warnings of, like, shit's about to hit the fan. Something's going on that they're getting warned about this.
Yeah.
Because like I said, I don't remember, and again, hashtag ODPHpod if I'm wrong, I don't remember a prior time in the cartoons where they got something like this.
Mm-hmm.
It was always somebody coming to warn them.
Yeah, there's always somebody doing something in this variation, but the one thing with telepaths, and especially to reach that far into space, like that's Phoenix level. Like,
yeah.
Which
could be.
Yeah, I mean,
Phoenix Force has been in the intro, not this week, but 2 weeks prior.
Well, the thing is, it's always been dormant in Jean Grey.
Right.
No matter what. Like, it's just that's the ideal host that it gravitates towards. I mean, granted, there's been other hosts in the comics throughout the history, but Jean Grey is synonymous with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see it be a reaction from Jean, who sees what happens in Genosha and unleashes a message out there. But I do think it's the Watcher.
Could be.
Because
that's what I'm leaning.
Because if the Watcher is getting involved, and granted, he has crossed the lines to help the heroes from time to time,
mm-hmm.
that would be a situation this plays in. And especially here, it causes Xavier to say, I need to get back to Earth now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're done. And unfortunately, the engagement is off.
Because he's still in the astral plane. everyone who's there gets yanked out, but their bodies stay there, or whatever you want to call them. They get turned to skeletons. Then Gambit shows up and he goes, wait, what is going on? Gambit gets turned into a skeleton, and then that's at the point where he goes, I need to leave.
Yeah. So everybody goes back, because at this point he has the Imperial Guard is there.
Yep.
He has the hierarchy of the Shi'ar Empire and Lilandra.
Yeah.
And Deathbird is like, and he's explaining to Lilandra, and she understands like what he's giving up, and it is a heartbreaking moment to a degree, but yeah.
Because there's genuine love between them.
Oh, yeah. And even when she's questioning, she's like, he's like, I do love you, but I need to go home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have to.
Especially considering the fact they think he's dead.
Well, yeah. So the fact that'll be a really messy situation when they explain that.
Yeah, it'll probably come down to reasons.
Yes. But it still will work. Because once he comes back to Earth, that's going to be a game-changing moment, too.
Uh-huh.
Then they flip to Storm's story.
Mm-hmm.
Where obviously the adversary has poisoned Forge.
Yep.
So Storm is trying to save him with a root of a cactus.
A little bit of a home remedy.
Yeah, so she's trying to do whatever they can. But when the adversary comes there, there's a bit of a standoff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is plays a very similar role to what happens in Life Death.
Yep.
Uncanny X-Men 186.
Mm-hmm.
So you do see that Storm confronts her fears.
Mm-hmm. Which is almost being voiced by the adversary.
Yeah. And the adversary is just, provoking her more and more. So It's almost like the adversary wants Storm to get her powers back.
Yep.
So this does wind up kicking in Storm's, overcoming the mental block that she has, because it turns out that she never lost her powers. She just thought she did, which it could have been a little bit of the Ray took away her powers, the one that happened in episode 2.
Right.
Or she just needed to conquer the mental fear. But you do see this big dramatic renewal of powers, and she goes back to the classic costume.
Yeah.
Which I love this moment from Giant Size X-Men.
Love the costume.
Yeah. So she winds up going back to being Storm of old.
Scares the shit out of some local wildlife.
Yep.
Because she goes flying around. She conjures a storm that's seen from space.
Yes.
Because that's not a hyperbole. There's folks in I'm guessing it's supposed to be the International Space Station.
Mm-hmm.
It's some sort of space station in low orbit or whatever. But they see the clouds and the storm or whatever, and they're like, what the hell is this? She goes back down to Earth. She starts scaring the horses and everything else.
Yeah. So after this moment, too, defeats the adversary.
Yep.
And it's to see that creature get defeated, I have a sense this is not the last point we're going to see the adversary.
Probably not.
But I have, I want to ask a question, but I'm almost scared to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If they wind up doing the Fall of the Mutants saga, the adversary does play a little part in that.
Could be.
Are you going to tell me the X-Men are going to go to Australia?
Why not?
I mean, it did happen in the comics.
Aussie.
Oi, oi, oi. So if it does happen, I wonder how that's going to translate.
Yeah.
Because I can see that going this route, which I'll be ecstatic about, because the X-Men in Australia is a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great one, though. I enjoyed it in the comics. But yeah. it goes into the little oddness that they do, because you don't think of them being, not in New York City or involved with the rest of the Marvel Universe.
Right.
Because in the comics, they're considered dead at that point.
Right.
And they're invisible to everybody in the world. Like, it's a crazy story. So if you want to go read it at your comic shops, definitely go pick those up. Or on Marvel Unlimited. It's well worth the time. But we do see that Storm has now defeated the adversary. Catches up with Storm, who's healing from the attack, from the poison, from the adversary. And then they basically turn on the news and sees what happens.
Mm-hmm. About Master Mold's attack on Genosha.
Yeah. So now Storm and Forge have caught wind of what has happened and are ready to now enter the fight.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get a shot of one Bolivar Trask.
Yeah, running for his you-know-what life.
Mm-hmm. And there's a voice in the background that is saying, there's nothing to worry about as long as you follow my lead.
Uh-huh.
And we do get the reveal.
Yep.
And Pat, who is that?
Mr. Sinister. He is the one instigating the war between humans and mutants.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that got brought up once they turned, when I say they, Forge and Storm turned on the television, it was the other end of that television report we heard last week, and or maybe like an update or whatever, because now we find out, because of what happened to Genosha, a lot of the mutants who moved there are looking to go back where they were living prior.
Mm-hmm.
And those folks' home countries are now very skeptical on bringing them back.
Yeah, because obviously the tensions are running high.
To say the least.
Yeah. The safe haven for mutants was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
Very publicly.
The day they joined the UN.
Yeah. So it is going to create a social tension amongst the inhabitants of Earth.
Yep.
And this is playing into Sinister's endgame, which I am a little bit surprised at.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Apocalypse would have been a better villain in this situation. But Sinister, because he is about genetics. Even though he has dabbled into the whole mutants versus humans
right,
a little bit.
Right.
And especially now, if you read the comics, he did play a big part in the fall of Kuroka.
Right.
So there is that factor to be played at, but it was kind of an interesting choice for me. Like I say, I would have gone more with Apocalypse. It does make more sense.
I think they were just going for more familiarity. I think a lot, just based on the look and the costume, a lot of more casual fans might recognize Sinister before they do Apocalypse.
Maybe.
It could just come down to familiarity.
I mean, that's a fair statement. Because the one thing, too, like I say, I compare right now to the comics.
Sure.
And with how interesting this time period has been, with Kuroka and the handshake that completely shook me up in X-Men 4, Rise of the Powers of X. Yeah, I remember seeing just Apocalypse coming up and greeting everybody at Kuroka and saying, yeah, no, I'm here. I'm here for the party.
Yeah.
Like, this is the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
Still has messed me up to this day. Not going to lie. Even though in the current issue of Fall of the House of X, things seem to be coming back to normal, and I'll just leave it at that. That's not a spoiler. The issue is out today as we record. But nevertheless, this episode really delivered on a lot of fronts. I do think that they are going to be borrowing a little bit from the powers of the end of the Kuroken era,
sure,
to be honest with you. And I think overall they hit their marks here, especially anytime they deal with the X-Men in space. It's always a weird situation.
It's always usually good, though.
Yeah. Final thoughts on the episode, Pat?
Good episode. Excited to see what the setup is. We've only got, 4 more episodes before the end. And, of course, it looks like the last 3 are going to be a 3-parter. You know, Tolerance is Extinction. But I'm excited to see where this goes, especially with Xavier being back in the fold. You know, he's alive. He's not dead. You know, and what's this mean, and what the hell's going to happen? Because, hey, we got a whole potential fight over who runs the X-Men here going on. So that could get ugly, especially in the eyes of the law.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to see where this goes, and it's going to be real good.
Yeah, somebody better call Matt Murdock or Jennifer Walters. They're going to have to get involved in this case.
Daredevil, if I'm not mistaken, did show up in Spider-Man the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm. And She-Hulk could always show up, too.
That's true. There was a Hulk Animated Series.
Yeah, because I think with the teaser that we've seen, Captain America is coming.
That's what I've heard.
And I wouldn't doubt we see him next week.
Could be.
Because I think for the 3-part Tolerance of is Extinction event that is going to be taking place, they're going to go, I'm not saying Endgame, but no, you're going to see a lot of characters show up for this.
It's going to be a big payoff for the animated fans who've been around and watching since the 90s.
Yeah, so it's definitely time to be excited. Until then, though, hashtag ODPHpod, what is your thoughts about Episode 6 of X-Men 97, entitled Life Death Part 2? Did you love it? Did you hate it? And why? And remember, on social media, spoiler-free for 72 hours, and then we can go deep dive into it. So just gif your reactions and let us know what you thought of the episode. That being said, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Sunny Hepburn.
And I'm Brandi Fleece.
And we're from Book of Lies, the podcast, where we discuss liars, cheats, and thieves,
scammers, and dirty, rotten scoundrels.
You can tune in for new episodes every Tuesday to hear about another lowdown, dirty liar.
And learn how to spot them.
So that's Book of Lies podcast. You can connect with us on social media, Twitter at Book of Lies Pod, Facebook and Instagram at Book of Lies Podcast. Bye.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, and we have to talk some Star Wars Bad Batch.
Yeah, we do.
Going into the series finale.
Mm-hmm. 2 more episodes now.
Yep. It's a crazy time for that Clone Squad 99.
Uh-huh.
Because obviously things are heating up at the right time.
Oof.
Because Well, let's be honest. If we're going into the series finale, you know they're going to want to deliver something if Dave Filoni is connected with this in any way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And Clone Force 99 definitely is stepping up, obviously trying to make the last-minute save to get Omega out of some trouble.
Yes.
So we have to break down the latest episode entitled Into the Breach, episode 13 of season 3. You know the deal by now, so Pat, what is your spoiler-free statement on the Disney Plus Star Wars show?
Really dug this episode. I will say, if you are a fan of, like, you know, kind of James Bond-esque espionage, you know, sneaking around, you know, maybe a little Splinter Cell for you video game fans, I think you'll really dig this episode. It's a little bit of a setup. It's a little bit of a, hey, we're at A, we got to get to B. Let's make it a little bit exciting. But it was a really good episode.
Very good episode. I think they're picking up the action pace, which
I
like.
Yeah.
And obviously going into the finale, they really got to start moving. And I thought that he did a good job about this because we know what the end game is. We were curious about how we're going to get from point A to point B.
Yep.
Definitely got some answers to that. Exciting ending.
Yeah.
Which really got me excited to see where we're going for the final two. So I thought very well done. And I thought a lot better than the past couple episodes we've seen.
I agree.
Yeah, definitely picked up the pace. So let's get into it, Pat. 3, 2, 1. Let them know.
Like I said, I thought the episode was great. I dug the kind of espionage aspect of it and sneaking around. Dug the setup they did with Omega and kind of like a, she's not just going to take this lying down and she's going to do something about it. And then, you know, Clone Force 99, you know, our heroes coming together and teaming up to try and find her, get her, and do everything they can while also having to be stealthy, which is not something they are.
Right.
If you've watched this series at all. Phenomenal episode, though.
Definitely picked up the pace. Definitely a lot of espionage, which you alluded to.
Yeah.
And I thought they nailed what they needed to. Because the one thing that we've been waiting is they've taken so long to find out about how to get to Tantus.
Right.
It was like, are we going to do this or not?
Right.
And I thought they finally did a great way to explain it.
Yeah.
I thought that they have definitely given a little intrigue about how they got there.
Yeah.
And when we jump into Flash Strike for next week, I think they're going to hit the ground running.
I will also say the ending of this episode was one of the cooler action sequences I've seen in Star Wars animation.
Fully agree.
Oh, that was so clean.
Absolutely fully agree. Because where this kicks off, Omega is now under the care of the Empire and involved in the Tantus subjects of Project Necromancer. Which, Pat, in case anybody's tuning in, what is Project Necromancer?
So Project Necromancer is the secret, and I do mean secret because it is like a for your eyes and ears only. If you don't know, need to know, you ain't going to know. Project going on with the end result being a viable clone for Palpatine to transfer his essence, mind, spirit, whatever you want to call it, into because, as has been established in both old canon and new canon, it's a hell of a draw on the human body to keep using the dark side like that.
Oh, absolutely.
So it kind of shortens your lifespan.
Mm-hmm. So the Empire has been rounding up kids and basically testing them to acquire a certain amount of force, you will say?
Yeah, a little bit of force. Midi-chlorians, find somebody strong enough.
Mm-hmm. So we do see Omega meets a bunch of other subjects, Sammy, Jax, Baron, and Eva. And Omega is not taking this, you know, sitting down.
She's kind of playing it quiet and coy at the start, like, oh, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. Well, what's going on? What are you guys doing here? And then, oh, by the way, I've escaped here. I'm going to do it again.
Mm-hmm. So she winds up telling that little group that, yeah, she's planning on doing an escape. Are you going to come with me or not?
Yeah.
And basically has an idea about how to use a passage that's in the cell walls of the building.
Yeah.
Which, what is it about the Empire construction?
It's always faulty.
There's always faulty. Like, who are they hiring to do their construction?
Also, if you didn't think the Empire was fucked up, one of those test subjects is a literal baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's issues with this.
Mm-hmm.
Lots.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Clone Force 99 and Rampart.
Yeah.
Are on their way. Now, Pat, who is Rampart?
Rampart is the former Imperial officer that they, I guess you could say, rescue, but whatever, from an Imperial jail, planet, whatever you want to call it, because they're like, hey, you were high up. He was a vice admiral. You should know where Tantus is. Let's take you, and you can tell us where it is.
Mm-hmm. So they wind up taking Rampart and meeting up with Echo.
Yeah.
And
super happy to see him again.
Yeah, that was a very cool moment. And where do they jump into, Pad?
Well, so they meet up. They contact Echo. Echo stole an Imperial shuttle, and it's not an ideal one, but hey, it's short notice.
They'll get the job done.
It's all I got. And they come up, start coming up with a plan. They're like, all right. They go to Rampart. All right, hey, spill the beans. Where's Tantus? Like, how do we get to Tantus? And he goes, listen, I'm telling you the truth. I've been there, but I don't know how to get there. And he then explains the process of getting there. He's like, it's not just something they give out to you. You have to go to a base. I forget the number. I think it was like base number 4 or whatever they said.
Yeah.
He's like, you got to go to this base and then you got to dock. You got to have the proper clearing procedures, you know, and then they will transmit the coordinates directly to your computer and you'll just go, you know, and they're like, oh, that's fine. Well, we can plan this. So we can figure this out. And he goes, well, no, you can't, because they change the landing coordinates for this base once every rotation. So once a day.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, fine, we'll just do it now.
Yeah. So they wind up using that to get to that station at Coruscant.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Going to Coruscant. How are you feeling about that?
Boy, that's, talk about going into the heart of the lion's den, especially these days, a little risky.
Mm-hmm. So they do this, have to do a little espionage, if you will.
Yeah, land on a landing platform. Guy comes up and they're like, listen, we got to be quick about this, because at some point this shuttle's going to be noticed. It's missing. It's going to show up on their records that it's here. They're going to put two and two together and realize we're not who we say we are, because the thing they do is they buff out all of the distinguishing features of their armor so that they hopefully blend in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And as they're getting approached by the receiver of the aircraft. I
think he was a lieutenant.
Yeah, of the aircraft.
Yeah, he was a lieutenant.
Rampart does something that, well, we weren't sure how he was going
to
play.
He was happy to do it, though.
He was more than happy to do it, so he winds up using his charisma, if you will.
Yeah, his big boy voice.
Yes, and winds up talking down to the receiver and says, basically, I'm here on classified missions. Do you want me to call the governor?
And he doesn't just say governor. Governor Tarkin.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, the lieutenant shits his pants.
Yep.
Because at that point, because up to this point, he's like, well, who are you? What's your mission? What? I don't have you on my manifest. What even force are you? I don't recognize any of your armor. And then at that point, Rampart goes, all right, let me take care of this. And he just starts citing code and paragraph and section. He goes, do you really want to violate that? And he goes, no, sir.
No. So they go about their mission, but unfortunately, they run into a stumbling block.
Yeah. Huh?
And they cannot get the information from the databanks at the station. So basically their entire mission is now up in smoke.
And they're in the heart of the lion's den with a lot of lions around them.
Yes. But with Echo aboard, a play is made.
Mm-hmm.
And Pad, what is that play?
They find out that there is, what was it, like a medical ship? Yep. It was a science ship. There's a science ship there that they find out through the databanks or through the computers that science ship is on its way to Tantus. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, they're going to Tantus. They'll know how to get there. We just got to tag along with them. And they're like, well, you can't, because there's a detection, there's proximity sensors.
Yeah, they got sensors all around.
They got sensors on the ship. They're going to detect us latching on and just hopping along for the ride. And at that point goes, no, well, if I sneak aboard and I deactivate the proximity sensors, you guys can attach and just ride along with us until we get to Tantus.
Yeah. So they wind up having to do this very cool action sequence.
Yeah. Bah, 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 bah,
yeah.
Bah.
Kicking that Mission Impossible theme.
Hell yeah.
Because they wind up flying their space vessel right underneath the shuttle.
Yeah. Well, and this is all the while Echo sneaks from their ship onto the science ship. While they're loading it, he gets spotted by an astromech droid. Gets almost spotted by a K2 droid, which those things are supposed to kick your ass. And then he almost gets spotted by a couple of officers or stormtroopers or whatever they were, and sneaks onto the ship, gets on the ship, sets off a sensor in the ship, and it goes off on the bridge. And the one of the somebody working on the bridge goes, oh, sir, there's an undetected, unscheduled droid something or other going on in the ship. They're like, oh, go check it out.
Yeah.
So he almost gets discovered there. Knocks out the stormtrooper sent to investigate the whole thing, and they're like, hey, is everything okay? You know, what's going on back there? And then he picks up the mic and goes, oh, no, we're totally good. Malfunction. All the meanwhile, the ship is powering up its hyperdrive to leave. The rest of the clone Force 99 is on their ship with Rampart and goes, we got to abort mission. Like, that we can't tag along. We're going to lose him. If we get any closer, the sensors are going to go off. And Hunter goes, no, no, Echo will come through. And like you said, at the last possible minute, he deactivates the sensors, because at that point they're like, fuck it, we gotta go for broke.
Mm-hmm.
They swoop in there, do a 180, flip upside down, latch onto the ship right as they hit the switch and go to hyperspace.
Yeah, and that's how it ends.
Yep.
Great ending.
Phenomenal ending.
Absolutely impressive ending. And I like how they're picking up the pace. Like, they need to do this. I think, unfortunately, the past two episodes have been good.
Yeah.
But
it's all set up.
A lot of setup. So now we start needing this payoff, and we finally got some here. Because now, going with the two episodes, they're really going to be flying at a fast pace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big win for everybody.
Yes.
Final thoughts on the episode, Pat?
Great episode. Dug the James Bond spy espionage aspect of it, and the setup for the end. Ooh, boy, is it going to be crazy.
Yes, absolutely. They just need the Limp Bizkit theme song for Mission Impossible. They'd be fine. That's the only thing they're missing. I'll stand on my soapbox about that one.
Oh, Lord.
In the meantime, though, here's up on that hashtag. Hashtag ODPHPod. What is your thoughts about episode 13 of season 3 of Star Wars The Bad Batch, entitled Into the Breach? Let's have that discussion, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hi, guys. This is Matt Groom. I'm the writer of Inferno Girl Red, and you're listening to the ODPH podcast.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Pad, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about, the first of which is some MCU news and regarding Hank Pym.
Oh?
Yeah, so reading from an article on IGN.com, it looks like Michael Douglas wanted Hank Pym to die in the last Ant-Man and the Wasp movie.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the article on IGN reads, quote, Michael Douglas, the Oscar-winning actor who plays Hank Pym in the MCU's Ant-Man movies, wanted his character to die, but only in the most fantastic way possible. Douglas appeared on The View earlier this week to talk about his new Apple TV Plus series, Franklin, and was asked about comments he's made about only returning for a fourth Ant-Man movie if Hank Pym dies. He clarified that his death wish was for Hank actually came before that with last year's Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Quote, "This actually was my request for the third one," Douglas said. "I said, with all these great special effects, there's got to be some fantastic way where I can shrink to the size to an ant size and explode. I don't know, whatever it is. I want to use all those special effects," close quote. But that was on the last one, he continued. "Now, I don't think I'm going to show up," close quote. As mentioned, Douglas did previously say that he would return for a potential Ant-Man 4, telling the Hollywood Reporter his one condition, quote, "as long as I can die," close quote. Clearly, Douglas really wants Marvel Studios to kill off Hank Pym already, close quote.
Well, okay, initial reaction. I would not be mad about that, because I think for Quantumania, brother.
Yeah.
It needed something.
It needed a little more sizzle.
Yeah.
A little more shock value.
Yeah, because I think for trying to establish Kang as this, you know, ruthless dictator.
Somebody should have died.
Yeah, you needed to have a big death.
Uh-huh.
He would have been perfect for it. Hank Pym, you know, is...
At least the incarnation they're doing.
Yeah, is an interesting character, but he's one that you can get by with if he's not in other stories.
Right, and if Michael Douglas wants to go that way about it, hey, that's fine, you know. If they wanted to bring it back for something future, for like a flashback, you know, it doesn't necessarily tie him up for months and months and months on end. You can do it in and out in a day.
Yeah.
You know, would have made sense.
It definitely would have. So I can understand his point about it. And,
yeah.
And also, when you get to that third movie level,
yeah,
you're usually not going for four.
Right.
Occasionally, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think in Ant-Man's case, like three, the fact that we got three Ant-Man movies is
very surprising,
insane, but
very surprising.
So I don't fault him on those comments.
Yeah. Then sticking with more movie news, this one surprising but also not. Found out that in the upcoming Sonic 3 movie, Keanu Reeves has been cast as Shadow.
Oh,
which I heard this, I'm like, surprising, also not, because that makes sense if you listen to his voice. The article on The Hollywood Reporter reads, quote, "Keanu Reeves is speeding along to another franchise, with the John Wick star heading to Sonic the Hedgehog 3. He will be voicing the popular character named Shadow, multiple sources tell The Hollywood Reporter. The news comes on the heels of a jam-packed CinemaCon presentation from Paramount last week, when the studio debuted the first footage for Sonic 3. This included the revelation that Dr. Robotnik, played by Jim Carrey, was depressed and out of shape after the events of Sonic 2, but gets his groove back thanks to creating Shadow the Hedgehog, a character first introduced in the video games in 2001's Sonic Adventure 2. The character is in many ways the anti-Sonic, dark and edgy while mirroring the hero's powers. close quote. So, I mean, listen, surprising that like Keanu Reeves is doing it, but also you think about his voice and just kind of his vocal mannerisms. That makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. I love the casting.
Sticking with casting news and animated movie news, the animal Batista is joining Avatar. And no, I'm not. And no, I'm not talking James Cameron movies.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say like,
I'm talking Avatar: The Last Airbender. So the article on IGN reads, quote, "We finally have some details on the first of three planned animated Avatar: The Last Airbender movies, with Dave Bautista and singer-songwriter Eric Nam joining the cast. Nam will be voicing Aang, while Bautista will be playing a villain of some sort. Donnie Kwan, Jessica Matten, and Roman Zaragoza round out the voice cast of what's currently being referred to as Aang: The Last Airbender. Who they'll be playing is being kept under wraps, although Matten previously said on her website that she'll be playing Katara, although that's been since deleted. Paramount Pictures made the reveal at its CinemaCon 2024 presentation in Las Vegas, where it also confirmed that it's still on track for its already announced October 10th, 2025 release date.
Hmm.
It's previously referred to as Untitled Aang Avatar Film, so we know the focus would be on Aang, but Paramount has revealed little else about the plot. Close quote. The thing we should note about this also as well is that Lauren Montgomery, who was a storyboard artist for season three of Avatar: The Last Airbender and did work on all the episodes of The Legend of Korra, mm-hmm. is going to direct this movie. So the movie is in very good hands. Also, Dave Bautista is in the movie.
Yeah, that's big.
That's going to be awesome.
That is very, very big.
Yeah. Then switching over to some TV news, I got some casting news for a season two of a show I'm very excited for, and that'd be Wednesday, season two.
Yeah.
If you have not seen season one of Wednesday, go out of your way and do it. My fiance wanted to watch it. I was like, yeah, sure, I've seen the Addams Family movies. I remember the Addams Family cartoon from the 90s. I enjoyed both of those. Let's give this a shot. Did not expect to love season one as much as I did. Season one is amazing. But we got a little bit in casting news for season two, and that is Steve Buscemi is joining the cast of season two.
Oh, okay. You have my attention.
The article on HollywoodReporter.com reads, quote, "Exact character details are being kept under wraps, but sources say Buscemi will play the new principal of Nevermore Academy. Reps for Netflix and Buscemi declined to comment," close quote. Sign me up. That's going to be amazing.
Steve Buscemi. That's all you need to say.
Yeah.
Like, and I am definitely intrigued by this. So yeah. That is an excellent casting. I have to admit, I have to go out of my way to catch up on that.
It's very good.
Yeah, I know. Very but my schedule.
I know.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
Then we got some potential heroes news. And I'm talking, yeah, that TV show that was on NBC in the 2000s and
really
had the reboot of sorts or sequel of sorts in the mid-2010s.
Yeah.
So reading from an article on Deadline.com, it says, quote, Tim Kring's Heroes is eyeing a second encore with Heroes Eclipsed, a new incarnation of the popular 2006 superhero drama. Sources tell Deadline. Appropriately, the project is being pitched to buyers now, the week of the solar eclipse. The original series started off with a solar eclipse in the pilot, which became a recurring element throughout the series, also reflected in its logo. Written by Kring, Heroes Eclipse is set years after the events of the original series, as new Evos are being awakened and discovering powers that will change their lives. Featuring familiar villains and new enemies who once again will be attempting to suppress the next step in human evolution, it will be up to this new group of heroes to save the world. The premise evokes the 2015 limited series Heroes Reborn, also created by Kring, which was also set years after the events in the original series and introduced a new group of Evos as more ordinary people discovered that they possess unique abilities. The new characters were joined by Heroes Noah Bennett, played by Jack Coleman, who led the follow-up with a number of original cast members making guest appearances, including Sandhil Ramamurthy as Dr. Mohinder Suresh, Masi Oka as Hiro Nakamura, and Greg Grunberg as Matt Parkman. Heroes ran for four seasons, and seasons after a red-hot start with a pop culture-defining Save the Cheerleader, Save the World first chapter that earned the show an Outstanding Drama Series Emmy nomination. Both the original series and limited series Heroes Reborn, which drew softer ratings, aired on NBC, close quote. So if you haven't seen Heroes, the original series, go watch that.
The original one is great.
First two seasons are amazing. I watched them in college when I first got Netflix. Boy, did that lead to a lot of late nights. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of cliffhangers in that show.
Yes.
A lot of episodes. You get to the end going, all right, I'm going to watch one more episode, then I'm going to go to bed. cliffhanger ending. Shit, I can't go to bed. I got to find out what happens next. Third season suffers a little bit, because, but you got to remember that was written during and filmed during the writer's strike of
a writer's strike.
A writer's strike.
I hate saying that, but yeah, no, it's
third,
a one.
Yeah, that was in the early 2000s. So third season is not as good as the first two, but the show overall is phenomenal. Heroes Reborn was okay. It didn't blow me away like it did the original series, but hey, I'm always on board for more Heroes.
Well, you know, the thing is, I do agree with you. The first two seasons of Heroes, perfect timing.
Yeah.
Like, you want to talk about a show that took advantage of the moment?
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because nobody really saw that come in. There wasn't anything really like that on TV at the time.
Yeah.
So I really think that it was just right place, right time.
Yeah. Then I'm going to give a little bit of an anime recommendation, because premiering on Crunchyroll just this past week, Kaiju number 8. It's available in a whole bunch of languages. I know dubbed is out for one. I think it's only one episode right now. Could be wrong. Definitely give a recommendation to this show, because it is animated by the folks over at Production IG. That name sounds familiar. It's because they did episode 5 of Star Wars Visions, The Ninth Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. They've also working in production with the folks over at Studio Kara. If you don't know them, they did some work on live action films such as Shin Godzilla in 2016. Uncredited, though. They also did some work on 2022's Shin Ultraman. And then they also did work on Shin Kamen Rider. Among a host of other anime stuff, the Dragon Dentist, this one, Evangelion. They did a couple Evangelion movies, 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0. Fantastic friggin' series. Mm-hmm. I saw the trailer. It came up recommended to me when I was going on a Crunchyroll one day. I saw the trailer. I'm like, I'll give this a shot. First episode's awesome.
Yeah.
It is nuts. It is crazy, and I'm excited to see where it goes from here.
No, the trailer looked really dope.
Uh-huh.
Definitely going to want to check that out. So I have a couple Marvel news to go into before we do the comics picks for this week.
Okay.
So from our fine friends over at Marvel, we have a new Werewolf by Night series coming.
Ooh.
Red Band Comics 2, by the way.
Okay.
So reading the press release from our good friends over at Marvel Comics. Quote, following Blood Hunt, Marvel Comics continues to push Red Band material this August with Jason Lowe and Sergio Davili, Werewolf by Night.
Ooh.
So Jason was on the show for Turn a Page a couple weeks ago. He's fantastic. I know he's, you know, like, his writing has been absolutely lights out.
Right.
I mean, if you can get me to care about a Century comic, you know you've done some good work. So going back to the press release, Werewolf by Night, Jack Russell's new solo ongoing series will be written by Jason Lowe, writer of the upcoming Werewolf by Night Blood Hunt one-shot. And then Sergio Davalia, who's known for work on Venom and Thor, their premier horror icon, will undergo a startling transformation during Blood Hunt that will cause his upcoming battles and hunts to be too graphic for some readers. Labeled with a parental advisory and polybagged to keep those weak of heart from experiencing the intensity, Werewolf by Night will mark a new chapter in the character's 50-year storytelling history as Jack gets his claws, fangs, and fur blood-soaked like never before, end quote.
Huh.
So I am excited to check this out. I mean, like I say, Jason does great work. I'm showing Pat the cover. This is not a Red Band, but
ooh,
a very, very solid cover.
Nice cover.
By E.M. Gist. So definitely want to keep an eye out for that when it drops in August. Blood Hunt is kicking off in May,
uh-huh.
So we want to keep an eye out for that. Also, one that is going to have Pad's attention, Peter Parker is a Spider Goblin.
Yeah, I heard about this.
Yeah, so according to the press release we got.
I saw the image, the preview image got posted a couple days ago. Boy, the Spider-Man fans have some things to say about this.
Yeah, so yeah, so the image is up. I'm showing Pad right now. Yeah, this one's going to kick off an Amazing Spider-Man 50 by Zeb Wells, Ed McGuinness, and Todd Knack.
I'm not going to lie. I want to see somebody cosplay that. That would be really dope as a cosplay.
You know, I could see it happening.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet.
You get one of those, I don't remember what they're called, but like the little, they're almost like a Segway, mm-hmm. type deals, but you modify that into the hoverboard, and then you dress the whole thing. It could work.
Yeah, but I am curious about this. So we'll definitely have to keep an eye out for it. I know that, yeah, this is causing a lot of reaction right now, to put it mildly. So we'll have to wait to see when this drops. Well, like I say, 50 is coming right around the corner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll be discussing that issue on the show. We'll put it out that way. And last thing from our friends over at Marvel, it was announced that Earth's Mightiest Heroes have 2 years to fix the universe in Ultimates number 1. So this is the Ultimates team book that's done by Dennis Camp and Juan Ferengi. This is hitting June 5th. And if you've been a fan of the current restart of the Ultimates universe, this is going to be something definitely up your alley. And I will say this, Dennis Camp, if you haven't checked out his stuff, is very, very good. It's very intense stuff. Like 20th Century Men is no joke.
Uh-huh.
And I loved his work on Bloodshot Unleashed. So this is one I'm super excited to see him on. And definitely will be posting the trailer later today. So definitely excited to get everybody's reaction about this. The Ultimates obviously have made their impression on pop culture fans.
Yeah.
And definitely be something to keep an eye out for in the upcoming weeks. Like I said, June 5th is coming right around the corner.
Crazy.
But today is New Comic Book Day. So, Pad, you're hitting the shops. What are you picking up?
So first, for the folks over at DC, you've got Superman issue number 13, and this is House of Brainiac. This part two, the description of this reads, Superman and Lobo team up. Together, the Man of Steel and the Main Man race across the universe on a hunt for the Lobo army and Brainiac. Can they get along? Long enough to get to them before Brainiac enacts the next stage of his dangerous plan to create a new House of Brainiac? This one's, of course, written by Joshua Williamson. Should be amazing.
Yes. You've only checked out the crossover thus far. Part one was on point.
Uh-huh. Then you've got Star Wars Mace Windu, issue number 3. This is written by Mark Bernadine. And this one reads, quote, one of the greatest Jedi must stop an explosive secret from falling into the wrong hands. On the refinery moon of Rho-Mira, Mace Windu and smuggler Azita Cruz, carrying the formula to a paradigm-smashing energy source, are on the run from Rho-Mira's security forces and a hut-hired bounty hunter. Can Mace dispatch a squadron of fighters led by the ruthless and Zelen Yaya Shram with nothing but his lightsaber and the Force? Introducing Miro, Dia, Dusk Weavers, and the Hadal Path, a cult obsessed with wiping technology from the face of the galaxy. Boy, that sounds familiar if you're a Star Wars EU fan. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We'll see what happens. That should be phenomenal. Then from the folks over at Dynamite Comics, you've got Gargoyle's Quest, issue number 1, from Greg Weisman. This one reads, quote, acclaimed author and Gargoyle's creator Greg Weisman is joined by artist Pasquale Quilano for an all-new chapter in the ongoing Gargoyle saga, and the stakes have never been higher for the Manhattan Clan. Thwarted in her earlier attempt to gain control of the ancient magical artifacts known as the original Keys to Power, the evil Demona has her sights on 3 new keys that will give her the ability to make any human in her vicinity into her willing puppet. All that stands between Demona and world domination are Goliath and the Manhattan Clan. But despite their best efforts, Demona always seems to be a step ahead, gathering one key after another. And once she has them all, the entire human race had better beware. Listen, it's Gargoyles, Greg Weisman is writing. You cannot go wrong.
Yeah, I know you love that series.
I do. And then you've got James Bond, 007, issue number 4 from Garth Ennis. This one reads, quote, returning from a death-defying trip to the International Space Station, Bond resumes his search for the stolen Stelvota formula. But once he discovers where the trail ultimately leads, the legendary 00 agent finds himself playing for the highest of stakes and setting a trap for his enemies that risk turning all of MI6 against him. Oh, my Lord. This can't get any better, but it probably will. Then from the folks over at Dark Horse Comics, you've got Star Wars, The High Republic Adventures, Saber for Hire, issue number 1 from Kevin Scott. So you already got me sold. But the issue description reads, fan favorite Saber for Hire, Ty Yorick, returns in her most dangerous and personal mission yet. The former Jedi turned monster hunter is having the time of her life behind the Nihil Stormwall. She's never been busier, battling dangers that the Jedi would have usually handled and earning credits galore. If only she hadn't agreed to take an apprentice. A storm is brewing on the horizon that will see Ty crossing sabers with old enemies and friends. New York Times best-selling author Kevin Scott joins forces again with the sensational artist Rachel Stott for an emotional and action-packed adventure in a galaxy far, far away. Can't go wrong with the High Republic.
Yeah, I know. That is up your wheelhouse, too. I mean, obviously Star Wars is, but I know High Republic especially.
Yes.
That is definition Padawan J. So for my picks this week, coming out from Comixology Originals. Pad, if I said pro wrestling and crime, how fast am I running to pick this book up?
Not fast enough.
Yeah. Hard Style Juice, number one by Clay McCormick and Ricardo Lopez Ortiz. This is a very cool book that delves into the world of pro wrestling, and there's a little bit of mystery behind a little crime drama that is unfolding. And this one really impressed me very, very much.
Yeah.
This one combines a lot of elements that I know from all of my times watching independent pro wrestling. So this is completely up my wheelhouse. And we are going to actually be talking with the creative team on Nerd Initiative this week.
Nice.
Podcast form will be out on ODPH later, if not this weekend, by next week early. So we're going to have a lot to discuss with them about this, about some pro wrestling. Obviously, AEW Dynasty is coming up this weekend. But I have a feeling that we might be getting into some GCW talk. I'm just going to put it out there. And also, we have our good friend Rich from 3FN is going to be joining me for that interview as well. So make sure you subscribe to Nerd Initiative YouTube for that. And obviously, ODPH podcast for that. And then definitely, we'll talk about this issue next week. But this one really impressed me. Like I say, a little bit on the hardcore style, so to speak, but a great story behind it and an excellent cliffhanger ending.
Yeah.
Also, from our good friends over at Skybound Entertainment and Image Comics, Cobra Commander number 4.
Ooh.
So this is the penultimate issue about the origin of the head of the biggest terrorist organization in the G.I. Joe universe. And what can you say? Joshua Williamson has been writing this amazing horror-esque story that really has got, a unique take for Cobra Commander, which obviously going into this quest for power that he's on, it plays right into the wheelhouse. Melania and Leone on the art definitely are crushing it. So there's a lot of things to be excited about with the series going into the final moments, which definitely will have G.I. Joe fans talking.
But nice.
This is definitely one that I've been very much enjoying. And also with the Duke series that Joshua Williamson is penning too is fantastic. Also from Marvel, we kind of alluded to this a little bit into the X-Men 97 review, but Fall of the House of X number 4. So Jerry Duggan, Lucas Renrick, and Jethro Morales are on the art duty and creative side of things. And this story definitely, if you've been watching X-Men 97, you should jump in at the first issue. A lot of kind of similarities are a little penned here, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
But there's a great, great story going on in the X-Men's final stand against Kuroka. And definitely, if you were an Apocalypse fan, you'll definitely want to check that out. Because, Pat, I'm just going to show the cover right here.
Holy shit.
I love that cover. That's just vintage storytelling right there.
Yep.
Last but certainly not least on my picks, obviously, Stephanie Phillips is writing it. I am picking it up. Black Widow and Hawkeye number 2 from Marvel Comics. So this one is one of the most famous pairs of Avengers going through a little espionage story. And things are moving very, very fast. And I love how they have it set up. The story is very, very cool. It's taken me a little while getting used to Black Widow having a symbiote. So that is something that if you're not used to, it'll take you a little second to get on board with, but I'll tell you what, Stephanie Phillips is doing an amazing job with this. Paolo Villanelli is definitely crushing it on the art duties for this. So definitely keep an eye out for the story. 2 issues in, definitely has my attention. Saying definitely a lot because it's definitely worth picking up. Also, if you're looking for more comic reviews, nerdinitiative.com. Go see what the rest of the bullpen is up to this week. Definitely had a lot of reviews going because, if I say definitely a lot, I'm being very, very serious about that. So make sure to go check that out on the way to the comic shops because trust me, there's nothing better than walking into a new comic book shop day on a Wednesday and talking to fellow fans about what you're picking up. So that being said, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this week in entertainment. So for the one and only Padawan J.
The supervising producer of X-Men 97 said he wants to do 7 seasons and a movie for X-Men 97. I say, give it to me.
I second that. I third that and I fourth that. I'll even drop another definitely for that. My name is Ken M. Thank you as always for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.